also would like to welcome the member who introduced this particular bill, Honorable Self. Welcome to you. And welcome to Advocate Klakula and her team from the Independent Electoral Commission, who are also here today. And maybe we can also ask their comments on some of the aspects of the bill as we go along. The idea, sorry for only starting now, but we're actually waiting for Sound and Vision. They're supposed to do the recordings here, and they also know how the projector works, and they are quite late in terms of coming to assist us, so we will make other plans with the recording of the proceedings, and if members can, in the meantime, then use their hard copies of the presentation by Honorable Self. The idea tonight is not to conclude this whole matter, but I think our idea tonight is, as also required in terms of the rules and the rule change that took place, to give the member who introduced the bill an opportunity to present to us what exactly the objectives of the bill are, and so on. And then we will have the opportunity to ask questions to the member and to interrogate the matter in that manner. And at a next meeting that we will have, we will then deliberate on the bill and deal with the motion of desirability and so on, and take the matter from there. So this evening we will then first of all give the member the opportunity to present the bill, and I want to hand over to Honorable Self then to present the bill to us. So members, please just use your copies.
Chairperson, thank you very, very much indeed for that introduction, and honourable members, it's really a pleasure to be in a different committee for once. I've spent, I think, about the last 14 or 15 years on the Correctional Services Committee, and I feel liberated now being able to address some different committee. But thanks very much for the opportunity, and let me also congratulate the committee's researcher on a really excellent summary dated the 14th of June, which I think really encapsulates some of the complexities and dilemmas of this issue. And it is really central issue, namely how the nation's representative should be elected to Parliament. And it's a particularly complex matter in South Africa for obvious reasons, given our history and given the fact that our democracy is relatively young. And as I said, the research report outlines some of the dilemmas surrounding this topic, and I think it also gives some of the historical overview of the debates on this topic, both globally and in our own country. So what I would like to do by means of the presentation, which would have been up on the screen and which is an excellent technicolor for the benefit of the chairperson in front here, but apparently not on the screen, is to run through what would have been a PowerPoint presentation, which gives a very high level summary of the proposed bill, and then, as the chairperson said, would attempt to answer any questions that you might have. So the Electoral Amendment Bill 2013, as introduced, is introduced against the background of what we have at the moment, our current proportional representation system. And as we all know, our current electoral system for the National Assembly is a fixed list proportional representation system, and the 400 members that make up the National Assembly are allocated to political parties according to the exact proportion of votes that those parties receive in the election, give or take best remainders. Each party then submits to the Independent Electoral Commission a list of candidates, and the candidates that are then elected depend on the proportional of votes that one receives out of 400. Now, the PR system that we have at the moment has undoubted advantages, and I'm the first to admit and concede those advantages. First of all, it's very easy to understand, and it is widely perceived to be fair. So everybody knows that you go and you vote for a political party, and you get as many members of that party in as the proportion of votes cast for that party. In that sense, it almost exactly reflects the will of the voters. So if a party gets 30% of the vote, of the electoral support, it will get 30% of the seats. It is substantially inclusive of small parties, in the sense that one has a very low threshold that one has to achieve before one qualifies for representation in the National Assembly, and it is substantially immune to manipulation because it is relatively simply illustrated. Now, at the same time, there are undoubted weaknesses of the proportional representation system. The first and foremost of those is the lack of accountability by MPs directly to the voters who elected them. So as a result of that, it's a common refrain among South African voters that South African voters do not always know who, quote, their, unquote, MPs are. And I would argue that that leads to alienation and cynicism, which in turn leads to relatively low levels of participation. And I only this morning was reading the comments of Dr. Rampele, who argues that up to 41% of eligible voters do not vote in South Africa because they feel disengaged from the vote from the electoral system. And I would argue that one of the reasons for that is that people don't feel a sense of personal connection between themselves and their MPs. And finally, that MPs cannot always perform constituency work in allocated constituencies because they have no particular rights or entitlements. In other words, every political party allocates MPs to constituencies, which may mean that up to 7 or 8 MPs are nominally the MP for a particular area. And if you go along to a particular school or a police station or anything else like that, one has no particular status to be there other than one is a member of the National Assembly. Where one has a constituency system, or even if one in a different context is a ward councillor, one has a certain status by being elected directly from the voters of that particular area. Now, accountability is clearly better achieved by a constituency system where there's a direct link between a single MP and his or her constituents, as happens, for example, in the United Kingdom. So that one can go, if one's a voter in a particular area, one can go to one's MP and say, you are my MP, I require you to do X, Y, and Z because you are my MP. But that also has significant disadvantages. First of all, that you can have a situation in which an MP is elected with less than 50% of the votes, in other words, a minority of the votes, and it very often happens that way in single-member constituencies. But more pertinently, for the purposes of our discussion today, the South African Constitution in Section 46(1) states that the National Assembly consists of no fewer than 350 and no more than 400 women and men elected in terms of an electoral system that, and then in paragraph D, results in general in proportional representation. So any constituency system that we wish to institute in South Africa would have to conform to that prescription. And a pure single-member constituency system is highly unlikely to conform to that prescription and to result in general in proportional representation. Accordingly, I would argue, we need to have a mixed system of constituencies and a list in order to guarantee proportionality as required in Section 46(1) of the Constitution. And there are, as that excellent research paper showed, various ways in which this can be achieved. So, over time, South Africans have sought to grapple with this problem and to come up with a solution that would guarantee both accountability via some sort of constituency system and proportionality at the same time. The first of these was the Slobbert Commission in 2003, which suggested 69 multi-member constituencies returning between 3 and 7 members each, electing 300 MPs in total, and that a further 100 representatives should be allocated from national lists to restore overall proportionality. According to that report, both the constituency and the national lists would be closed, meaning that the parties would determine the order of the candidates to be elected. Because it was just before the 2004 election, the Commission recommended that there were transitional measures in place, that 200 MPs from 9 provincial constituencies should be elected and 200 MPs from national lists, which in essence corresponds to the current electoral system. Then in 2009, there was an independent panel of assessment of Parliament that was chaired by Greg's Govender and included in its ranks the current Speaker of the National Assembly, Mr. Max Sisulu. And it came to the conclusion, or one of the conclusions that it came to, was, quote, the view of the panel is that the current electoral system should be replaced by a mixed system which attempts to capture the benefits of both the constituency-based and proportional representation electoral system. Then, if we look at other examples, we have the municipal electoral system, which is contained in the Municipal Structures Act, which provides for the same number of ward and list, or substantially the same number of ward and list councillors in municipalities. And the question obviously arises, why should we not apply this particular system also to the National Assembly and have 200 constituencies directly elected and 200 from the list, similar to the system that applies in the German Parliament? We would argue that the constituencies in that circumstance would consist of about 118,000 voters, which is too large a number of voters, in our view, for a single member of Parliament to service effectively. Likewise, it's very difficult to achieve overall proportionality as required by the Constitution, and may lead to the exclusion of minority parties that neither enjoy geographic concentrations of support or a threshold of support to guarantee elections on the list. Which leads us then to the proposal that is contained in the bill. And what the Electoral Amendment Bill seeks to do is it seeks to achieve what the Slobbert Commission called, quote, core values of fairness, inclusivity, and critically, simplicity. So it proposes 100 constituencies, each to be represented by 3 members of Parliament, elected by proportional representation, thereby filling the first 300 seats in the National Assembly, and it proposes a further top-up of 100 seats allocated to parties so that the overall composition of the National Assembly reflects the proportion of votes cast by the electorate for parties as closely as possible, in much the same way as is the case with the list in a municipality. Now, I've included an illustration of how this might work in practice by using the figures that are derived from the 2011 local government election figures. Now, obviously, these figures are going to change as a result of the census and the registration of voters that is due to take place in November of this year. But if one worked on the figure of voters that were on the voters roll in November, or in the 2011 local government election, there were some 23,655,000 voters. If one has 100 constituencies, one gets a quota of voters per constituency of 236,550. You can break those registered voters down per province, And one sees that they range between a high of 5.5 million in Gauteng down to 572,000 in the Northern Cape. You then divide those numbers of voters by the quota, and one would then arrive at a situation where the Eastern Cape would get, for example, 13.1, Free State 15.8, and so on, sorry, 5.8, and so on, but that leads only to 95 constituencies. One then applies the principle of the best remainder, or the highest remainder, and one then allocates the remaining five constituencies to provinces with the best, highest remainder, and one arrives then at a situation where one has 100 seats. It is our proposal that the Electoral Commission would demarcate the constituencies in the same way as the Electoral Commission currently demarcates voting districts. Each constituency would, according to the bill, have substantially the same number of voters and should not be allowed to straddle provincial boundaries. Every party contesting the constituencies would submit a list of names of five candidates, thank you very much, five candidates in ranked order for that constituency. These names and the logo of the party would appear on the ballot paper for that constituency, but the voters would still vote for a party. That is to make the system as simple as possible. And for your benefit, we have included an illustrative ballot paper. It would obviously be a bit much longer depending on the number of parties that contested that particular constituency. It happens to be my constituency, but I've just put candidates 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. And the voter would then come in and vote for the party of their choice. The MPs from that constituency would be elected using the same proportional representation system that is currently used to elect the regional list MPs in our current system. In other words, exactly the same mathematical calculation would take place in allocating MPs to parties. If a casual vacancy occurred in a particular constituency, one would not have a by-election. Going back to the slide, one would simply fill the vacancy from the next person on the list in that constituency as supplied by the party. Once the 300 MPs from constituencies had been elected, the Electoral Commission would then allocate the 100 MPs from the national lists submitted by the party so that the overall composition of the National Assembly reflected the proportion of votes cast for each one of those parties. The question would then obviously arise, why does the bill not provide this for the provincial legislature? It is our view that these matters are best regulated in provincial constitutions. Furthermore, that some provinces have a minimum number of MPs of 30, which makes the application of quotas very complicated. It would also mean that the constituencies for the provincial legislature might be different from those of the National Assembly, leading to a certain degree of confusion. But I think that if the principle is accepted, one could have a discussion at the level of the National Council of Provinces about how these particular provinces could, these problems could best be overcome. Finally, the bill also makes provision for certain matters relating to absent and special votes, some of which are contained in the bill that has been submitted before you by the department. First of all, it allows eligible South Africans living abroad to register as voters at embassies and consulates. Secondly, it would allow registered voters who know that they will be absent from their voting districts to apply in advance for special votes, and here's the important point, for both the National Assembly and the provincial legislatures, and this would apply to voters both inside and outside South Africa. and it would oblige the Electoral Commission to establish temporary voting stations in locations overseas where more than 500 valid applications for special votes had been received. Chairperson, I fully accept in conclusion that it will not in all probability be able to implement a constituency system in time for the 2014 election. But I do think that it is important to have the regulatory framework and infrastructure in place well before the 2019 election so that all the necessary matters that need to be undertaken are undertaken well before that election, and so that that can take place in terms of a constituency's mixed system. And I do believe that the bill as before you represents the best possible compromise between accountability and proportionality while at the same time preserving the principle of simplicity. I commend the bill to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Self. I think that you have done a very proper job in terms of preparing the bill and also in terms of this presentation here tonight. Members, it is now your opportunity to make comments or ask questions. So can I please see the hands? These would now be general comments or questions to the presenter of the bill. Yes, Honourable Fumalot.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to hear from the Honourable Member because the whole issue is on accountability. If I understand the bill correctly, the proposal is actually trying to ensure that there's more accountability from the public representatives towards the electorate. But what we actually have here is a proportional system within a proportional system. Now, accountability is one, can I say, feature, one aspect when it comes to electoral systems. I, of course, am of the opinion that the electoral system as such cannot ensure accountability. It's not the electoral system that ensures accountability. It's the different political parties that must ensure accountability. And I know the pros and the cons of different electoral systems as such. But my question to the Honourable Self is that now you have a very large constituency, consists of about more than 200,000 voters. You have three members that's going to be elected. So firstly, I want to say that 300 members will be elected from the constituencies. In fact, that means that we are distributing 300 seats amongst the three largest political parties. How are you going to, because you provide for 100 representatives to be elected from the proportional votes, how are you going to combine that? So for instance, if I may use an example, you've got Party 8. Now that party got 200 members elected from the 300. But proportionally, that member, and I didn't do the example before the time, gets, for instance, 60% of the votes. Now, 60% of, say, 400, if I was 240 members, so I presume 40 members of the 100 will then be allocated to Party 8. Was the calculation being made to ensure that we stay with the spirit of proportional systems to ensure that smaller parties still get representation? If you get 1%, for instance, I'm not so sure on the present proportional system that that party will get 1% representation in the National Assembly. Because of this system, that party will have to get more than 1% to ensure a 1%. Was that calculation made, and can I see that? That's for the start. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chair. The first is that certainly there's public debate out there that there needs to be changes, and people do feel that public representatives aren't close to the ground and representing them adequately. So certainly I think the principle is that change is needed, and this Parliament needs to look at that. That was my first comment. On Adam's presentation on his paper, which is very good, he talks about the shortcomings of a PR system, where he says isolates minority parties, and I'm going to obviously let Honourable Self explain it more, but that's where the 100 come in, so it ensures that those smaller parties are accommodated in that spirit of proportionality, and which is, you know, to make sure that there are no parties that would otherwise lose out on a pure constituency-based system are included as well. And I think just to comment what the previous member said with regards to accountability, he's quite right in that it's really the political parties, but in a system where you have three MPs in a constituency, it will certainly create a competition to make sure that you become the best MP representing your people, so that people would bring you back the next time round, and that would certainly bring a certain type of accountability. Thank you, Chair.
Any more questions from the members? No. I also want to ask a few questions from my side. In a sense, the first question is whether this might not be detrimental to the principle of multi-party democracy, and whether what this is going to create wouldn't be closer to a two- or a three-party system, in a sense, than to the detriment of the smaller parties. Because quite clearly, to a large extent, maybe a small party's chances of getting a seat in Parliament would now be only based on, most probably, on that 100 proportional seats, so-called top-up. So whilst a small party has a chance of, let's say, if it gets 1% at the moment of the vote, then it is 1% of the 400 seats available. Now, to a large extent, it seems to me that it would come down to 1% of 100, because clearly where in the constituencies, even if it's multi-member constituencies, the race would be tighter, fewer parties really standing out, fewer members being elected, and so on. So that's the one pertinent question. Then you make the point that it is very difficult to achieve overall proportionality as required by the Constitution if we follow the municipal system as indicated in the Municipal Structures Act. The question there is, however, whether there is not a better chance to achieve proportionality if you have 200 list MPs, not only 100, if that larger top-up of 200 wouldn't actually achieve or give one a better chance of achieving proper proportionality. You also make the point that it may lead, this municipal system that we have, may lead to exclusion of minority parties who enjoy neither geographical concentration of support nor threshold of support to guarantee the election of list candidates. And it seems to be quite clear that this model of 300 constituency MPs vis-a-vis 100 proportional MPs, this model might also do exactly this. It may lead to the exclusion of minority parties, as I indicated with the example earlier. Just your comments on that. To come back to the point that Honourable Groenewald made about accountability, in a sense, he said basically we have now two proportional list systems, in a sense, one in the constituency and one as far as the 100 top-up MPs are concerned. But the other element is also that, in a sense, if you look at this ballot paper that you presented to us, in a sense, you know, it is also a bit confusing to the voter as such, because what he gets is a ballot paper with a number of candidates. That is the only time he really sees that here is this candidate that may possibly be elected if he votes for this party. It's not even a guarantee that that person will be elected, because it depends on the proportion of the vote that that party receives. But in a sense, this is the only time that he basically sees a sort of a proportional list, in a sense. And you know, is he really going to? And it's also three MPs that are elected, not only one. Is that accountability problem? It might be. I can see your point that it might be a bit better, but is it really going to solve the accountability problem? In terms of the what exactly you were proposing. Then the question that I think later we will ask the IEC just to comment on. I want them to comment on not really on the electoral system element, but rather on the matter of the achievability and how practicable it is to achieve this whole idea of allowing a provincial vote for South Africans living abroad or being abroad, whether that is really, you know, whether they would be able to achieve that, how much it would cost. I know they didn't come prepared here, they only came as observers. But, you know, just get basically an indication from them, or maybe at a follow-up opportunity, they could give us an indication as far as that is concerned. Then I see in the bill itself, in clause 3 of the bill, 3C, you indicate that he is not regarded to be ordinary resident at a place where that person is lawfully imprisoned or detained, but at the last home or place where that person normally lived when not imprisoned or detained. What are the exact implications of that provision there? Would that mean that prisoners, you know, cannot vote? What exactly is the implications of that? And last question, you refer in clause 14 of the bill to where over 500 ballot applications for special votes have been received in terms of section 33A from any single conurbation in, is that the correct pronunciation, in another country. The Commission must establish a voting station within that conurbation at which voters who have thus applied can cast their votes. But it, a conurbation refers to a sort of an urban area. What would the position be in terms of rural areas? Any further questions? Can we first ask Honourable Self just to reply to this, and then we'll see for the next one. Thanks.
Thank you very, very much indeed, Chairperson and members, for those very pertinent questions. Let me start by dealing with Honourable Groenewald's question about how the mathematics works. The mathematics works the same as is currently applied in the case of the composition of municipal councillors. In other words, if a party gets a particular number of wards, ward councillors, what then happens is that the proportion of votes that that party gets in that municipality is then calculated, and if it gets too many representatives in the wards, it gets fewer representatives off the list, if you know what I mean. So what we would look at is saying so many votes were cast for party A, for party B, for party C, for party D. That is the proportion that they got. That is what they are entitled to get out of 400. Then you subtract from that the number of constituency seats that that party achieved, and the difference is the number that they are entitled to from the top-up list. Now, I've been very careful in this presentation to say that reflects the will of the voters as closely as possible, because it is possible that there are some parties that would not make the cut. But if, for example, to use the chairperson's point of departure, that if you got 1% of the vote, in the current circumstances, you would be entitled to four MPs in the National Assembly. And if you were then not to get any from the constituencies, you would get four off the list, all other things being equal, and with the question of competing fractions and all the other things that go into a PR election. Now, that is the proposal. So as to make it as closely approximate to the number, to the proportion of votes cast for political parties in South Africa. Now, you would be aware, chairperson and members, that there are many PR systems that operate that have thresholds. Germany, for example, has a threshold, 5%. You don't get more than 5%, you don't get represented in Parliament, unless you win a seat in the constituencies. Now, this bill does not propose anything of the sort, because it is deliberately intended to be as inclusive as possible, bearing in mind the trade-off that you're making in terms of accountability via a constituency system. So I concede up front, it's a trade-off that you're going to have to make, but you're making it in a way that seeks to be as inclusive as you possibly can be, because of the very important principle of multi-partyism to the extent that that can be done. But I know that the Honourable Grunewald's party can get much more than 1% in the next election, so you shouldn't worry. I think I've dealt with the question of the multi-party and the top-up and how inclusive it is. The question of whether one should use a bigger list to make it more inclusive is a very attractive proposition. But then, as I said, you do run the risk of making the constituencies very big and thus destroying what you're trying to achieve in the accountability link. A way around it might have been to increase the number of members of the National Assembly to, say, 500, but that is precluded by Section 46(1) of the Constitution in any event and would require a constitutional amendment. So, as I said, there are a question of trade-offs that one has to deal with. Then the question of the candidates and the ballot paper, that's the first time that a voter would see the candidates. Well, you know, yes, maybe that is so, but one would, as the Honourable De Freitas said, one would presume that those candidates would be actively campaigning in those areas to maximise their own personal vote, and would therefore become known in a way that many candidates are not known when they stand for election, because they're standing for as candidates on a list. And quite frankly, at the moment, I would venture to suggest that, you know, less than 0.01% of the South African electorate know who's on any particular party's electoral list at the time that they go and vote. They go and vote for the party, at least in this system. Even if they only find that out in the ballot box, they at least know that those are the candidates that are up on offer from a particular political party, and you get the additional advantage of people choosing in those areas candidates that are likely to maximise the support of their party in those constituencies. So there's far, even if the lists are chosen by the political party concerned, the political party has a investment and a real incentive to choose candidates that are going to maximise the votes in those particular areas. So they're likely to be rooted in those communities, well known in those communities, and connected to those communities. Obviously, there is a problem that one has of having three MPs rather than one MP. But as I said, this is another trade-off that one makes because of the difficulties of achieving proportionality in a single constituency system. As far as the specific questions related to the bill is concerned, the question of people who are in prison, obviously if you have a constituency system, you don't want a constituency called Polespoor Maximum and Polespoor Medium C, because if everybody who was eligible to vote in Polespoor prison voted, that would be a constituency all of itself, and that's problematic in my view. So what we are assuming is that people would register where they last lived before they went to prison and would then cast a special vote in the same way that anybody else cast a special vote and would be then calculated where they last lived. As far as the conurbation is concerned, the idea there is obviously you are going to get concentrations of voters in urban areas. And that is why I used the term fairly loosely, struggled with trying to come up with a better concept of major urban areas where there are likely to be higher concentrations of eligible voters. Obviously, if you don't fall into that conurbation, you can either apply to vote in that conurbation or in the embassy in that particular country concerned. And then as far as the practicality of the achieving the provincial vote for South Africans abroad, well, we had a big, long argument with the with the Electoral Commission and the Constitutional Court a couple of years ago, and I'm sure that they are more than willing, able to answer the questions. I think we have a different point of view between ourselves and the Electoral Commission. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any follow-up questions or new questions? Honourable Groenewald seems to be inclined to have a follow-up. After he's asked his question, I'd just like to have the comment that I requested from the Electoral Commission on that one matter.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, firstly, I want to ask whether any calculations has been made about the cost of the system, because it's an important aspect. Then I also want to know, because if I look at the example of the ballot, for instance, Party A put up five names. Now, in practice, I mean, the members are voting for a political party. They are not voting for an individual candidate on that ballot paper. They still vote for a party, a political party. All they see is the names of the candidates. Is the Honourable Self telling us that in practice, if you do your campaigning, that you're going to put posters up of all those candidates of you? Because if that is the case, I think it's going to create confusion about who I'm actually voting now for. Thirdly, one of the negative aspects of such a sort of a mixed system is and some people think it's the other way around. I think that the proportional system gives party bosses more power. In an electoral, in a mixed system, the party bosses is actually getting even more power, because the competition amongst the candidates will be to get on the national proportional list. Because if you are a candidate in a specific constituency, you will have to work very harder. And then there is going to be favoritism amongst the candidates whether you want to be on the national proportional list or on the constituency list, because it's better to be on the national one, because then the constituency candidates actually are working hard to ensure that you get elected on the national list. The other question I want to ask is about accountability, because I want to come back to accountability. We're living in 2012. There are two aspects when it comes to accountability. Firstly is that the electorate want to make contact with their representatives. We have the social media, we have internet, we have the modern technology. So contact in today's age is not like in the 16th and 17th century, where you only see your member of parliament or your representative when he or she is back in the constituency. I mean, contact is overall. And accountability is when the electorate can give inputs into lawmaking. And I think that our present system, for instance, the portfolio committees, where submissions can be made from the public, where people come and see what is happening, it's accessible when it comes to the contact of the representatives. The other aspect of accountability, that is one aspect. The other aspect of accountability, yes, is that people want to know, this is my member of parliament. If I have a specific problem, I can go to the member and I can feel, but this is the member who represents my political views to solve my problem. Now, according to your system, it is possible, for instance, that one political party can get all three members elected in one constituency. So there won't be any competition amongst the different MPs to see whether he or she serves the electorate better than the other one, because you can get one political party with three representatives in one constituency. The other problem is that your constituency is so big, you have, in fact, back to the old situation where it's not a small constituency, where people know, yes, like I was the MP for Stilfontein. They actually know where you are living, and they can come and knock at your door. This is going to be a large constituency, because that is one of the negative things of a big and large constituency. So I'm not so sure that we are going to ensure more accountability. I can ask many questions about accountability, but how does the Honourable Member foresee how you're going to breach that? For instance, what I've mentioned. The other aspect is, Jefferson, and there are actually 10 points of criteria to determine whether an electoral system is a good system or not. Where is accountability of the representatives is only one. The accountability of the government is another one. But in the situation of South Africa, with our past, our historical past, one very important issue is that we must ensure that we have broad representativity. The Honourable Member said that's not really going to be a problem. But then we must also ensure that the electoral system is of such kind that it is accessible to the people and that it is meaningful. People must feel that their vote is going to make a difference. That is linked to the fact that it enhances, that's actually what you said, with multi-parties participating in the system. If you go to the proposed bill, I foresee that some political parties, forget who already has got representativity, that they feel, but it's no use to participate because I haven't got the chance to be part of the first three parties in this specific constituency. How are you going to accommodate that? I think this is also a complex system in the fact that the voter must now vote for a representative on a proportional system. It's actually only for a party. And then on a national system for, again, a political party. And I'd like to go through and see the calculation, because I'm not so sure whether you can use the local government system exactly the same in this system. I think there is some difference because you have three candidates now. But okay, that's the other thing. So I'd like to know on that specific issue and issues I've raised, whether you made did you apply your minds to that matters and how you're going to address that. Specifically on the accountability, the two matters.
Other member, Honourable Mkhasela.
Sorry, Chair. I think much has been said, and you were correct that both the researcher, Mr. Salmons, has done very well to assist our thinking in terms of how we approach this proposed bill. But equally so, as presented by Honourable Self, the approach here is that we should ask ourselves the question whether the current system as it stands, where we all at least are aware of how the system has served us in the last 20 years, whether this is the best system with all probabilities and obviously with all honesty as much as possible, where we have seen uprisings, people toying, protesting, flames all over the show. You will find that the Member of Parliament that is deployed by a political party in an area in question does not even know that there's a protest in his constituency. In fact, some don't even visit their constituencies because they are comfortable in these parliamentary villages in Cape Town. And it happens because Parliament is in Cape Town. But if you're in a situation where a voter is more important than an individual Member of Parliament, which I think this system has proposed, is getting closer to ensuring that voters are more important than us sitting here in Parliament. But again, trying to take away the power of individuals who are leaders of political parties to decide all the time who should be a leader, I mean who should be a member in a particular list, well, in this sense, we're going to be able to say, if in a period one member dies or one member resigns, at least we've got other members on that same list that we can say, I know that if Mngasela resigns, I've got an Honorable Gam that is going to be my next Member of Parliament in that list. But perhaps it will mean that there needs to be more education, there needs to be more public participation, so that people are workshopped about what is about to happen. So basically, because we are going to have another opportunity, obviously, as the committee to engage on this particular bill, as proposed. So what I'm trying to get closer to, Chair, is that we should approach this in a much more positive and a much more open-minded position, so that we don't go into this debate with a situation that, with the attitude that says we are going to lose. Also, when we approach it, we should not go into it in a situation where we're saying we're going to win. We must go into it in a situation, with an approach that says, what is it that we stand to gain, and what is it that we stand to lose, and what is it that we stand to change with the challenges that we're confronted with within the current situation. And I think this is a very good opportunity for the first time for us to say, let us make democracy work, at least work better for the voters who put us here into office. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your comments, Honourable Boffman.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Let's try, and we're going to deliberate on the matter in some detail, so let us all try to more focus on perhaps asking specific questions and so on. I'm not addressing that to you, Honourable Boffman. I'm saying that following Honourable Nasela's interesting but more deliberative kind of input. Thanks.
Chair, first of all, when we came in here, you spoke about the IEC being the observer. Can we then agree as a committee that we don't put them on the spotlight because they are not prepared, it's obvious, like you have said, for them to have comments? It will be suicidal, I think, because they will be commenting on their individual feeling, not on what they have sat down and deliberated on to come and present before us. That's number one. Number two, Chair, it's according to what we've had in terms of the deliberations that have gone through, obviously, Chair, it is clear that the matter, the emphasis is put on accountability. And to me, accountability has nothing to do with the electoral system. It has to do with the system that we use in Parliament to make members to account for servicing, and also as political parties to make our members account on the work they are doing on the ground. So I, in any case, I do not see how then changing the numbers of members of parliament would make people be accountable, as opposed to a few number. The deliberation seeks to say, in a constituency, you are now having one member of parliament where you may have about three members of parliament. But those, the fact that he is one on servicing about 100,000 members makes it impossible for him or her to be able to get to each and every person there. So that's why I'm saying the number itself would not then make it possible. If the system that we are using to make them account is not in place and correct, whether we can put 10 there and 5 of them are not prepared or committed to do what they're supposed to do, that will still happen. So I do not see why do we have to continue deliberating on this issue. I would suggest that we maybe adjourn on this particular matter, go back and check some of the issues, including the one that has been requested now in terms of the comments of the IEC. And I do not see the IEC commenting without them being given directive by their superiors. So it means the other, and again, it's not about only IEC. This has financial implications. It means the Department of Finance has to also have a say. It has so many other things that we can code that will affect other related departments, and we don't have those particular views. So it is important that we have that collective together and we be able to deliberate on the matter. That's my suggestion and proposal, Chair, if it is supported.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think we can agree with you to allow the IEC to reflect on, you know, my question, and maybe at our next meeting when we are, as we indicated earlier, we will have a next meeting where we will have our deliberations and so on. The IEC can then perhaps just come back to us and give us their opinion on that specific matter, and maybe also apply their mind, Advocate Klakula, on you know, the implications these proposed changes to the electoral system, what implications that would also have in terms of finances, in terms of all kinds of matters. But we won't put you on the spot now, then. I think that is a correct suggestion. Secondly, we are still in the process of asking questions and so on to the member, so we will obviously continue with that and finish that, and then we will adjourn, and as we indicated earlier, come back at a next meeting to deliberate on the bill. I also just want to come back to the, I think, Honourable Self, you admitted that, you know, there are trade-offs and so on that will have to be made if one would agree to this kind of new dispensation. And as Honourable Ngasela said, on the one hand, one might stand to gain certain things, on the other hand, one might stand to lose certain elements. And I think that is obviously the sort of balancing act that we must have a look at, and so on, you know. On the downside, I just wonder whether you wouldn't agree that this proposed system might actually be less proportionate in its end results than the one that we have. In the sense that, for example, to come back to the 1% example, if a party gets 1% of the votes at the moment, that party would get 4 seats. It might be then that party might only get, because it's a very small party and so on, might only get 1 seat now, if with that 1%, because that 1%, that party wouldn't make any gains in constituencies, but that party will obviously then contest for seats out of the 100 top-up seats. And then that party that would today get 4 seats would tomorrow if we agree to this new system, only get one seat. So in that sense, already, it might be less proportionate. Secondly, is there not also a danger then that the 100 seats, as I indicated earlier, or as I asked earlier, will not be enough actually to ensure proportionality? As we said, you know, 200 seats might ensure that much better. That's why it is generally achieved in according to the municipal system in terms of the Municipal Structures Act, because there is that leverage, it's half-half. So in that sense as well, it might be the system might be less proportionate, or the end result might be less proportionate than what we have at the moment. The second thing is that it is, in a sense, I would think, also a bit more complex than the system that we have at the moment. Current system, you just vote for a party, you have a few ballot papers, yes, but I mean, you just vote for your party and that's that. Yeah, you actually have this whole situation of five people appearing on the ballot on a specific party, or next to a specific party, and another five people lower down, and there are no guarantees that all these people would be elected. In a sense, some of them might also not really want to participate in the election because they're too low down that list. And, you know, who is actually now the candidates really taking one on in the election? So in a sense, it is a bit more of a complex system for the voter. I would like to know whether you would agree with that. And in another sense, you say it's not introducing a threshold. But isn't it introducing a threshold by stealth, in the sense that the threshold is actually introduced because the 1% party will now only get one seat and not four seats as you know, is the position at the moment. So on the downside, I see those as possible problems. Maybe you can just respond to that and to Honorable Groenewalds and the other. You want to do a quick follow-up?
Can I just quickly, I mean, we're going to come back, but I just want to make 100% sure that I understand it correctly. If Ombrosel can just tell me whether I'm correct, if I understand you correctly, let me put it this way. Let's go to the formula. We're using the drip formula to determine the quota. In your constituency, you're going to divide it, the number of voters that has voted, you're going to divide it by 3 plus 1, and the result plus 1. That is going to be your quota. Now, on the 100 seats, what are you going to use? Are you going to use 100 plus 1, or are you going to use 400 plus 1? Because that is the essence of the whole situation. And I just want to know that, because then I can go and make my own calculations. Thanks.
Yes, I would do.
Thank you very much, Chair, and once more thank you to the Honourable Members for asking those questions. I think that my colleague Masizole put his finger on, I think, the essence of the thinking behind the bill, and that is that we have an electoral system in South Africa that I think we're all very, very proud of. Seen us through three national elections very successfully. Was it three or four? And I have no doubt we'll see us through the next one as well. But the question is it the best? Is it the best under the circumstances of an evolving democracy? And I venture to suggest that we have now arrived at a situation where we can introduce a greater degree of accountability than has been the case in the past. Because quite frankly, I guarantee you, if you polled South African voters, they would not know who was number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on the list of candidates of any political party, even the one they voted for. And that leads, in our analysis, to a degree of alienation from the voters from the electoral system, because they simply don't know who their MPs are. Now, I made the point earlier, this is a trade-off. It's You know, the most direct system of accountability is when you elect a single member from a single constituency, like the former MP for Sterkfontein. And then, but you have all sorts of problems. As I said, you can get elected by a minority of votes, you can't achieve proportionality, all the other things that go with it. But the Honourable Groenewald made the point that the constituencies are going to be very big. Well, at the moment they're huge. Well, it's not one, actually, they're nine. They're nine constituencies. Each one of them is a province. So, you know, the Northern Cape is a huge constituency. Now, compared to that, the constituencies that we're going to have are going to be smaller. They might still be big, but they're going to be smaller than the huge constituencies we have at the moment. And as the constituencies get smaller, the link between the elected representative and the voters becomes stronger. And I would argue then the interest in the electoral system becomes bigger. And I don't think it's all that complicated, actually. Voters, in my long experience in politics, are not stupid. They understand the electoral systems much more clearly than we give many voters credit for. So you can put up a poster of three candidates, and I think the voters will get it, that they're voting for three candidates, and that maybe all three will get in, or two of those three, or one of those three, or none of those three. But what it will do is it will encourage, as the Honourable De Freitas said, it will encourage those candidates to go and make the sort of door-to-door contact with voters that is the essence of a living democracy, in my view, where you build a connection between the elected representative from an area and the electorate itself. I'm fully aware of the systems that many political parties put in place to enhance the accountability of MPs to the electorate they serve. Some of those systems work well, some of those systems don't work well. But in the end, there are two sides of this equation, actually. The one side is making sure that the MP does his or her job, which can be done by a whip or a party boss or whoever. I am a quintessential party boss. I know how these things work. The other thing is allowing a member of parliament the access and the status and the ability to serve the electorate better by being the MP or one of the MPs for a particular area, in the same way that when the former honourable member for Sterkfontein used to go, Stilfontein, whatever, went along to the Stilfontein police station and said, I am the MP for Stilfontein and I want you to do X, Y, and Z. And the honourable member will know that that was a better accountability system in those days than what we have at the moment. He knows that.
There were other problems.
Yes, no, there are certainly other problems, and believe me, I don't want to go back to that system. Now, just coming on to the question of the will it be more or less proportional, and I welcome the calculation, but let me tell you how the calculation would work according to the way that it's conceptualized. That what we would do is we would exactly apply the formula in the constituencies that is applied in the provincial constituencies at the moment. In other words, you determine, if you submit a regional list as we do, your number of MPs that get elected from a regional constituency is determined by a particular formula. Exactly the same formula would apply in the constituencies that would elect three members. You then have a particular result. You have filled 300 vacancies. You only have one vote, okay? It's the vote for the... In other words, we're not conceptualizing that you have two votes, you have one vote. And the overall proportionality of the...
One vote
for the constituency. Because that way, what you do is you encourage political parties to put up candidates in every constituency. And then what happens is that you determine what the proportions are for the political parties, how many seats they should get as a result of that proportion, and you augment the number from the list. in exactly the same way as it works in the Municipal Structures Act, in exactly the way. So if you get too many seats in out of wards in the municipal system, you get less seats off the list, and vice versa. So that the idea is that the overall composition of the National Assembly should reflect as closely as possible the will of the voters as expressed through the votes that they bring out in the constituencies. So at the moment there is indeed a threshold. There is indeed a threshold. If you get too few votes, if you get less than whatever it is that's required to get... There is a threshold. Okay, this threshold might be slightly higher. But, you know, I think we're then quibbling about what constitutes an acceptable level of threshold. I would argue, actually, in view of the fact that the argument that I've already made, that the system is not all that much more complex than the system that we have at the moment. But what you do is when you go into the ballot box and you vote essentially for the party of your choice, at least you know who you're voting for. You've got a name, you've got a face, you've got a personality that you know that you're going to be voting for. And that, as I say, introduces in a much more satisfactory way the link that should exist between the electorate and the elected representative. I do concede that, as I said all the way along, that when one designs an electoral system, one has to engage in a balancing act. There are many, as the Honourable Schoenwald said, many different competing criteria and desirable features that you should have to take into account. But I really do believe that this does strike the right balance between representativity and accountability and has the additional advantage of encouraging a greater degree of participation. I think I've covered most of the questions, Chairperson. Well, look, any electoral system costs, okay? But if you look at the system that is used in municipal elections, I do not believe that the institution of a system of this nature would be any more complex or any more costly than running a municipal election. Indeed, it might very well be cheaper.
Thank you very much. No more questions, it seems, from the members. Thank you very much, Honourable Self. We do appreciate your effort in this regard and for a well-prepared bill and well-prepared presentation. The meeting is adjourned.
I'm going to go to the next one. but it's fine. It's more part of the deliberation.
I don't want him to leave. I know he wants to leave.
Oh, you want to still?
Yeah, you can bring up. Thank you.
Bye-bye.